Hello, this is your host, Dr. Casey Bradley, and you're listening to the Real P3 Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the pork professionals around the world, and it's brought to you by the Sun Swine Group and Swine Nutrition Management. Welcome back, everybody, from our short break over the Thanksgiving holiday. Well, we just wrapped up our Iron Special before Thanksgiving, featuring work out of South Dakota State University. So we're trying to incorporate the coffee and careers in animal science with the Real P3, joining students and professionals together to gain valuable insights for their careers. And so I thought to follow that up, I would have a special interview with Dr. Crystal Levesque. Dr. Levesque is one of my mentors, but also one of my great colleagues that I work with. And we are co-advisors a little bit, even though South Dakota State would not call me a co-advisor, but we are both mentoring our Jerry Bardell's up there through the Pork Scholar Grant. And so I wanted to feature her thoughts and philosophies on education and what she's doing in her laboratory. So stay tuned.
Well, I thought I'd do a little feature here for the audience of the Real P3. And you've heard from Caitlin McLean from South Dakota State University. So I thought I would bring on my friend and somebody who I really look up to in the sow research and swine research area, Dr. Crystal Levesque with South Dakota State University. Dr. Levesque, would you mind introducing yourself and telling the audience a little bit about your background and what you focus on from a research perspective?
Sure. So I'm originally from Canada, grew up in Western Canada on a mixed poultry, cattle and row crop. We grew wheat and barley and canola meal there instead of corn and soybeans, but same basic idea as a mixed farm here. I think I've shared this maybe once or twice before, did a bit of a crooked path to get to where I am. I raised three kids, but not alone, but we owned a restaurant for a little while and I did that, ran that for a while and then headed off to do a PhD when my kids got into school. And then the intent actually was to become a physiotherapist. That's what I was going to be when I headed back to university, and stars didn't align that way. And I ended up taking Phil Thacker's monogastric nutrition course. And honestly, he changed the trajectory of my life. But it's been good. So I'm here at South Dakota State, been here for just about 11 years now. Focus on sows. I got to start working with sows during my PhD and learned that I kind of really like them. And so that's where we do a lot of our work in sows. But of course, we also look at different ingredients and how we can utilize those more effectively. And what tools do we have available to us to utilize those feedstuffs more effectively in sows, of course, and in other pigs. Yeah, so I guess that's where I focus most of my time. And so my point for there is, it doesn't really matter how crooked your path is. If you are enjoying what you're doing and you can learn to take opportunities that arise when they come, yeah, you never know where you might be.
Well, I loved the fact that you shared your crooked path, because that's kind of what today's little feature special is about, is really how you see learning differently than a lot of professors, and some of the things we've worked on together and some of the things you're champion. It goes beyond just the love of nutrition and research, but really developing the future leaders of our industry. Can you kind of share some of these different initiatives that you have going on as well besides the research?
Sure. So one of the things that I started together with individuals from University of Minnesota, North Dakota State, and University of Nebraska-Lincoln was a communication training program. And that was centered around graduate students. But the focus there was helping them understand, how do they take the same scientific story, right, that we train them to present that science to the scientists and defend it and understand the detail of that science. But that's great. We need to do that. But for many of our students, that's not who they end up communicating with for the bulk of their career. It's producers, it's in an extension role, it's consumers or policymakers, and sometimes even the media. And so that's what that particular program focuses on, is helping the students develop those skills in taking the same scientific story, but telling it in a way that is meaningful for those other audiences. And that to me is the key word. It's meaningful. You know, most of the people that we talk to are intelligent and they can understand that we're telling them a story, but if it's not meaningful to them, it doesn't stay. There's not an impact on their lives. And in my opinion, that has challenged us in times and in discussions where the individuals we're talking to, because they don't understand, because they're not, it hasn't been meaningful to them, or they haven't understood the context and how it impacts them, that we end up often getting the short stick. And policies get made that maybe aren't that beneficial for ag. So it's important that we communicate in a meaningful way to others. So that's one part of the training program, and that we now have students from Georgia and Illinois and Penn State, Auburn, Texas. I'm sure I'll miss some in there, but students from across a number of institutions beside the original four where we started that program. And then the other piece that I do just with my own students is, I noticed a couple of years ago that really a lot of my students were coming in. They're great students, strong students, knew how to do the research. We could train them to do that, but they just didn't have the practical commercial experience that industry was looking for. And graduate students aren't like undergrads. They can't take the summer off. And certainly not in our program anyway, they can't take the summer off and go do that. So how could I incorporate that into my program and still do all the things that they need to do, but get that opportunity for some commercial experience? And for those that come with commercial experience, what can I do to help them gain some experience in other areas within the industry that they may not have had an opportunity to do before. So what we do is, as the students near the end of their graduate program, so typically, you know, they've maybe got a month or two, if that's all they focused on was writing, they could write it up within that month or two. And we work with an industry partner where the student goes and works for that industry partner for 3-5 months, say, or 6 months. That gives them time. For those that don't have commercial experience, typically what they have done is they've spent 4 to 5 weeks on the sow farm working like everybody else, general labor in the barn, working to understand what's it like in the sow farm. What are the challenges they experience? How do they approach those challenges? Then they transition into nursery finisher, spend another 3-4 weeks at the mill. Same thing. We're nutritionists and they know how to formulate diets, but formulating a diet, there's a lot more to getting a diet into a pig barn than just figuring out the formulation. And so they get an opportunity to spend some time with the mill, and again, working in the mill. I'm not talking about job shadowing, and I'm talking about boots on the ground, expectation to work, contributing to the company, and then hopefully wrapping the program up for another couple of weeks, maybe doing some higher level activities that would be more related specifically to what they trained in. So as a master's or a PhD, maybe they're supervising something, or maybe a couple of our students have had the opportunity to work alongside and start in a sow farm with the sow trial. And they worked in the sow farm, but they managed that sow trial while I was there, and then tracking piglets. And so that gives them a chance to use some of the skills that they've developed to benefit the company as well, right? And so for the students, the companies support that time. So the students are working usually at least 24 hours a week for the company during that time. And then when that internship or externship is completed, they defend their thesis and they're done. There's no, you know, if it works out for the company, well, that that gives them 4 months to check out another potential employee, but there's an expectation that there's a job offer at the end of that externship, right?
Well, and I think that's how our paths have crossed. And we'll go back to Marissa. She wasn't your graduate student, but she was kind of our connection in to working together on some different things and having her as an internship, leading my coffee and careers in animal science program, learning about your communication program, and then your internships and how we can conduct research together. And we co-wrote a grant. I would say you did most of the work, but it was on the grant to get our Jerry as our pork scholar, and kind of walk us through how our grant was different and kind of what, you know, what were we looking at when we applied for that grant with your students?
Sure. So I guess I don't know exactly how it was different maybe than some of the others, but some of the pieces maybe that set us apart that allowed us to be successful. So Arjorie spent 3 months, I think, at the sow farm, conducted trial. Again, similar to what I've talked about before, she was there to work. And so while she in amongst the work, we conducted her research trial. So she worked at the barn full time. She did that twice, actually, for two separate trials. The second one, I think, was a little bit shorter. It was about 6 to 8 weeks. But that really gave her an opportunity to understand at a much deeper level what are the challenges specifically related to sows. I mean, we were looking at particular component, feed intake during lactation, and then the impact of hemoglobin status on piglet quality and performance of the sows. So there were specific components that she was interested in, but now as she heads out into industry, one, she's got a great contact with some commercial farms, but if she continues in that area of sow work, she's got a little bit better idea of one, what are the challenges, and two, so we can, I'm mumbling a bit, but we can identify challenges on the sow farm, right? But what often is a little bit bigger of a challenge is figuring out solutions that are practical, that can address those challenges. And so I think that's maybe what's unique about what Arjorie was able to do, and that is she spent enough time on the sow farm that not only can she identify some of those challenges, but what are some of the implications or the limitations to maybe implementing some challenges that are addressed, right?
We gave her enough challenges to say what's possible and not on a sow farm, and how much time and energy it takes to accomplish things.
Yes. Yep.
But I guess the last component we are lacking for her, because she did come into our system or your program and then into the system with having an internship with Smithfield on research, but that was more the grow finish. So we kind of rounded that out for her. But the next component in DSM was a contributing letter support working with our Jerry is to get her in the lab to learn more on the lab side. She's got a real good basis on the applied side, but now developing some skills that she may not have as well developed in some other areas to make her that well-rounded researcher.
Yeah, that's right. So that's, you know, that's the other side of things is there's a lot of people out there working on trying to find some solutions to some of the challenges, and particularly with respect to nutrition, there's feed additives and companies taking byproducts and altering them to make them more valuable. We often don't get to see that side of it. What does it take to actually get an idea from an idea to a sellable product that has value? And so, yeah, that hopefully we'll be able to get that completed then in the next 6 to 8 months for her so that she can then see the other side of it. Okay, well, I figured out the solution, but now how do I actually make that solution come to fruition, that it can become available to the people who need to use it in the barn?
Yeah, I'm really excited for her to go through that. And I know Lisa with DSM and some of the sales team is working on her track to get some more development skills. So I'm really excited for her to have that component. And another strength of hers is her ability to speak Spanish and English, and helping her actually learn better English through this program as well, and watching her grow. I'm really excited to see that, what she becomes in her career. I already know she's talking about a PhD, so I guess we didn't scare her off yet. So
let's take a quick break and hear from our founding partners, Swine Nutrition Management. Swine Nutrition Management is a consultancy service in South Africa, whereas pig nutritionists have a vision to provide customers with practical, up-to-date, and accurate nutritional information, which will add value to their farming enterprises by moving closer to unlocking the genetic potential of their animals. They develop tailored, cost-effective feeding programs for customers. Their approach is not to develop least cost, but rather best cost feed programs. By reviewing the entire cost structure of the farm, this includes a deep understanding of the production equation, which is driven by throughput, productivity, and feed efficiency. Now back to our episode.
But what else do you think's lacking, I guess, in the education system for students and professionals going out there? Coming from somebody who's taken a different path, both of us have, you know, taken detours along the way to get to where we are in our careers. And what else do you think, besides the communication component and the practical farm experience, are we lacking in today's traditional education model for our up-and-coming leaders?
Oh, boy. That's a tough question. I don't know that I can, right on the spot, identify something else that's lacking. But I wonder, with the students themselves, Well, I would say probably most. I'm not sure that right now I can think of one who didn't, but, you know, most of the students come in with an agenda. I'm going to do a master's and I got to get that because I got to get this job, or I got to do my master's and then I got to do a PhD because then I got to get this job. And sometimes I think we push and we're trying to push them so hard that we forget to remind them to consider what opportunities are crossing their paths. So I'm not saying that if a student is sure that they want to do a PhD that they shouldn't. That's not my point. In fact, I knew before I finished my master's that I would do a PhD. There was no question in my mind. But an opportunity came across my desk for you know, many different reasons. And that was to buy a restaurant and go own a restaurant for about 4.5 or 5 years before I went back to do my PhD. And there, quite honestly, there were some great lessons that I learned in doing that. It was hard, and actually it made my PhD look like a cakewalk considering how hard it was to, you know, manage the restaurant. But it's important to be willing, I think, to take advantage of opportunities that come across your desk that maybe you hadn't thought about before, or maybe seem to send you in a different direction for a while. I'm evidence that you're never really too old to change directions, right? I mean, I was a grandma before I defended my PhD. Wasn't quite how I had planned it out, but it's true. I was a grandma first, and then I defended my PhD a couple months later. So I guess that would just be my, I don't know if that's a supervisor thing so much as maybe more to the students that are going through, is, you know, don't be afraid of a change in direction.
Well, I was going to even say the professionals listening, because you're a true shining example of it's never too late to go back and get a PhD or a master's degree or even a bachelor's degree. And there's so many different avenues to do that today than there was, you know, when we probably defended 10, 15, 20 years ago. But The one thing, we're recording this in the month of Mental Health Awareness Month, and there's a lot of different initiatives going through, and this may or may not be released, but one of the things I'm doing is a walk with me and trying to get that campaign going to bring awareness for farmers and students. And the one thing I have seen working with different students is a lot of this imposter syndrome. They don't feel like they belong. They don't feel like they have the confidence or ability to succeed. And I mean, where can we all play a role into that? Because that's, to me, also goes into mental health, right? We want them to feel confident and feel like they belong. What are some different things that we can help support the younger professionals in our industry or graduate students or just in students in general of developing that skill of having confidence and feeling like they belong in your mind?
Yeah, that's really tough. I guess for me, one of the things that I try to remind myself fairly regularly is making a mistake doesn't make me bad or wrong or less than, maybe would be a better way to say it. I make mistakes. I make mistakes all the time, but that doesn't make me less than somebody else. Should I learn from my mistakes? Absolutely. I mean, I would hope that we weren't making the same mistakes over and over and over, because then you're not really learning or you're just not paying attention. But getting something wrong and sometimes even sometimes mistakes can be fortuitous and we go, oh, wow, I'd have never figured that one out if that hadn't happened to me. But yeah, I don't know what other word to use by mistake, and that's not my favorite one, but by definition, that does not make us less than. It makes us human. And I don't know of anybody other than human. So, I don't know how to say that enough times to get, students to really take that to heart. Some do, others don't. But I think that's a big one. It doesn't make us bad or less than.
No, I completely agree. And it's interesting to see a lot of these students are driven, right? Especially if they're going to grad school, they are extremely driven. They have that life plan and one little thing goes wrong and it can totally wreck them. And, walking them through that is, I've had a lot of hurdles as well and I've made mistakes. Shoot, I probably made a mistake today and be like, okay. Like you said, I need to be paying attention and learning and not make those same mistakes. But I just really appreciate, Dr. Levesque, that there is a professor out there like you who puts as much effort into your research and your students. And it's magical to see the things coming out of South Dakota State. It's not in the number of publications. It's not maybe in the number of graduate students, but the life lessons and the opportunities that you're giving to students. And I just really wanted to showcase this with my audience to learn that there is a lot going on behind the scenes that we don't always see and hear. And so thank you. But before we go, I do allow my guests to turn the table and ask me a question.
Oh, boy. Well, first of all, thank you very much. I enjoy being on. I appreciate that. And I certainly appreciate the kind words about our program. We certainly try really hard. Question to ask you. So what you're doing and some of the others, that is not in my forte. So my question to you is, you trained as a nutritionist. What did you do that you figured out, hey, this is something that I could be really good at and is a way that I could contribute and share, beyond formulating a diet? What did you do? How did you figure that one out?
Well, I honestly think it was a forgotten skill. So we'll go back to fifth grade and I wrote a book and I won an award and I did some journalism in high school and I won another award. And I always thought I loved animals and, the only thing I could think of, loving animals so I could work with them and go to college was to be a veterinarian. And so I took a test in seventh grade. It said I could either be a mortician or a veterinarian. And I'm like, hey, I think I'm going to go be a veterinarian. And I get to graduate school And, you know, I meet a lot of different people, and I decided I did not want to become a veterinarian. I didn't have the money. I didn't enjoy being around those professors from the vet school. Dr. Gretchen Hill really influenced me, right? Same with you. Like, one person that changed your whole trajectory in life, it was her. And I'm grateful for her. But what I didn't realize is I had that plan, right? And I had that mission. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go work 2 years and get that commercial experience. And I'm going to be different than everybody else. I mean, obviously, I grew up on a smaller farm, but, you know, I said I'm going to go work on the largest sow farm I could find, and that was 8,000 sows in Albin, Wyoming for New Fashion Pork, and did that for 2 years, got really burned out, and I'm like, I'm going to go back to grad school. And I, at the time, there wasn't funding, but luck be have it, I guess, or my network, even back then, got me, you know, a job at the University of Arkansas as a researcher, and I got to teach students, and I got to do a lot of different things. And Dr. Maxwell said I was the worst writer ever, but yet when I graduated, he said I was one of the graduate students that truly understood the big picture. And I really, that fuel of, I still hate writing journal articles, okay? That's not my strength. I can do it, but it's not fun, okay? And I used that as fire to say, yeah, and had the opportunity. I've always written. I got started writing again with AB Vista for Pig Progress, and I loved it. And then here I get some go of DSM, right? I was on the trajectory, had my dream job with them. I was innovating, was coming up with new ideas, experimenting with artificial intelligence, new feed additives. It was like my dream. And oh, was it a major punch to the gut when they restructured and my whole team was cut. And, you know, I even felt it, and my boss didn't know it was coming. And I'm like, I've been here. I know it's coming, right? Mm-hmm. I see the writing on the wall. And it still was just hit me. And I think I would have hurt a lot more if I wasn't already going through coaching, because I was already thinking about what could I do that I'm not traveling so much or working for my son, right, when he started becoming involved in school activities. And I've shared it before, you know, he's kind of a special needs, and he's got some behavior challenges and some delays because he was a preemie. And so I really wanted that flexibility to do what I wanted and be able to be there and provide a good home and good, you know, structure and support for him. And that, but then I was like, what do I do? And I was basically open to possibilities. This podcast wasn't my idea. It was Willem Stein's idea. And he's like, who better than you? Your English is your native language. You're really good at this. And I said, why not? You know, and it's the same. Why not try? Why not write? I've always had on my bucket list to write a book and do some different things. So I don't think I'm going to keep putting that off. I think it's going to be there. And I would say the last 3 years have been, you know, financially, I have not made what a nutritionist does, but my heart and my joy and my passion for the industry to serve in a different way. And I've really pushed my boundaries. Do I keep going here? I still do nutrition, so I have nutrition customers, but I pushed that boundary. I now work with poultry and rabbits and gotten beyond pigs, even though I still have that special heart and love for them. But I just didn't say no, which is a fault to mine, a weakness. But yeah, in some of these instances, that opened up possibilities, and it was a forgotten talent I had. And I hopefully Dr. Maxwell can realize maybe I just wasn't a great journal article writer, but I am a good writer, and I have to remind him every time, you know, I still have this long-standing column in Pig Progress, so I must not be that bad, Dr. Maxwell. And, you know, I may not see a lot of peer-reviewed journal articles on my resume, but definitely something that I have embraced and I enjoy. And I took a break from the podcast for a while saying, is this really beneficial? And financially, probably not, but for my heart and my passion, the podcast is very important to me. Coffee and Curves and Animal Science is very important to me, but I want to take that to a different level. And I find trying to to herd a whole bunch of graduate students to get them together is a challenge, as you know, with your program. And the bandwidth of all their demands is hard. So how can I keep that passion going and mentoring? I still work with students. I still help them try to get their first jobs. I laugh and say I'm the underground recruiter. I help people connect, and they're like, "Oh, why don't you want to be a recruiter?" I'm like, "No, I want to help people." And so I decided to keep this going. And now with Caitlin being my guinea pig, and hopefully our Jerry will be on as well to get her that experience that's different, I hope to keep it going. I hope my passion never dies. So that is one of the biggest things. One of my weaknesses, never saying no, can be used as a strength. And that's always what I try to do. Is I may have weaknesses, but I always try to turn those into strengths. And thus, here I am 3 years later with a Real P3 podcast. And it's been a joy to bring it to this level.
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Crystal, for being on the Real P3. I can use your first name now at the end. I consider you a friend and a colleague and even a mentor at times. So I really appreciate it. And till next time, maybe I'll feature you on some different research than just iron in the future.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for listening. I always love catching up with Dr. Levesque, but our next series is going to focus on sustainability, but from some different perspectives than maybe you imagine. We're going to be featuring some marketing and some conversational advice about how we discuss animal agriculture to our consumers, to focusing on a nonprofit giving away grant money to innovate within agriculture across the world, and also what iFeeder is doing here from a sustainability initiative and representing the feed industry. So we have quite the lineup coming, and I hope you stay tuned. Until next time, but as always, if you get a chance today, hug a pig for me.